out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. These words our choir shared with us come from the writings of the mystical poet Rumi. Jalal ad-Din Muhammad Balkhi, also known as Rumi, was a 13th century Persian jurist, a participant in the ecstatic practice of Sufism, and like any educated Persian of his time, and maybe even our time, a poet. I've always been attracted to the stories of Rumi and his friends. Chief among them was his friend Shams Tabrizi. They say that Shams, who was an itinerant artisan, a basket weaver, walked by Rumi, who was reading from a stack of books. Shams asked, "What are you doing?" And Rumi, thinking him to be an illiterate craftsman, said, "Something you cannot understand." The story goes that Shams took the books and threw them into a pool. When Rumi went and retrieved them, he was astonished to discover that they all were dry. "This," said Shams, "something you do not understand." They say that Rumi loved Shams, regarded him with an intimacy that troubled Rumi's family and followers. Several times, people ran Shams out of Rumi's circle, thinking him a madman, only to have him return at Rumi's request. According to the Sufis who continue to follow Rumi, Shams Tabrizi mysteriously disappeared, killed by Rumi's followers. On learning that his friend would never return, Rumi went into deep mourning. He went to the hall of the dervishes, the place where, in ecstasy, the dances were danced, one hand facing heaven and one hand facing earth, turning and turning and turning. Rumi spontaneously shouted thousands of lines of poetry, poetry that he insisted was invoked by Shams, poetry of love and suffering, poetry of belief in the real presence of the divine, God available to people in their dances and in their tears, in their passions and in their friends. Out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. I have a group of friends. You may know that I was with some of them this week for our annual study retreat. This group is called the Freighters of the Wayside Inn, and I need to explain that Freighters is F-R-A-T-E-R-S. What you might, if you were a Latinist, say frater. But of course, you wouldn't put an S on the end of frater. So of course, it's English. It's freighter, like mater and pater and freighter. You know that? The Freighters of the Wayside Inn is the oldest study group among our ministers. I'll tell you the story of their foundation because it's a little silly. I like silly. In 1901, the minister of the First Parish Church in Malden, Massachusetts, which was the Universalist Church, very unusual for the First Parish, reached out to the Universalist ministers in Massachusetts and said, "In order to prepare for the preaching that we must do, it must be excellent preaching, and during the Lenten season, let's meet with one another and study texts together. Think about it. What it is we have to say in this new century to the people of our parishes and our churches." He said, "I've made arrangements for carriages to pick us all up at South Station in Boston,
on the third Sunday in February at the close of the day. I also made arrangements for a place for us all to stay. And so let's meet in the great waiting hall of Substation on the third Sunday of January. And he went, and he did what the room said. He waited, and he waited, and he waited, and no one showed up. Not such an organizer, but that's another story. No one had done this before. And so he suggested that the next year, he spoke to the minister of the First Universalist Church in Worcester, Massachusetts, and said, look, I'll go if you'll go, all right? And they both agreed. And then they said, let's find another place. Let's not be in Worcester, let's not be in Boston, let's find a place in between. And it happens in Sudbury, Massachusetts, is in between. And there's a historic inn, Longfellow's Wayside Inn, and whose innkeeper, by the way, was a universalist in those days. And so they made arrangements through the nephew of a member of the board of one of the churches that they would stay at the Wayside Inn. And that year, at least two people showed up. And over the course of the next few years, it grew and grew to the place where it outgrew the inn. And they made a decision at that point to stay a group of just 20 and somebody, well, there are 10 beds. So that's how many places there are to sleep in the inn. We had the 112th meeting of that group this past week. I'm connected to this group because of my mental challenges. You won't, I'm sure none of you have feelings like this. But there are times I imagine as a gay man that I will never find a partner and that I will die alone. It's just a feeling that I have. Now, I don't think it's real. And you know what? Beyond partners, I have a whole bunch of people who are going to want to be there to watch me die. But that's my pathology. Sometimes you don't get a pathology. And it happens that there was a man in my life, Carl Seberg, wonderful universalist minister, Unitarian universalist minister, who was a member of the Friars. Carl was a gay man, came out in adulthood, took me under his wing, didn't want me to go through what he went through as a seminarian, as a young minister. He wanted to talk me through it. Took me to lunch a couple times a year in Boston. We had a stand-in date at the General Assembly every year. Wherever General Assembly was, we had time to visit. And we just talked and had friendship. Carl went on a trip to North Carolina. He was getting a little feeble. And he was surprised because he became ill in North Carolina. And as soon as the word went out that Carl was hospitalized, all the Fraters who lived in North Carolina, and there was a group of them who had retired, were at his side. And within a day, a half a dozen had flown in from different parts of the country and were with him. And then he died. And when I tell that story to myself, I think of my pathology. And I think of the answer to it. And for that reason, I was willing to say to this group of people, I will, for the rest of my life, spend 4 days at the Wayside Inn, sitting by the kitchen fire, the kitchen was built in 1803, by candlelight, with the roaring, blazing fire, listening to papers, sharing camaraderie, supporting each other in the ministry, preparing for Lent. I have friends.
For such a lifelong commitment to be real, there needs to be a way of getting beyond the divide between right doing and wrongdoing. I remember a recent retreat where members spoke for the first time of a painful decision that had been made at the UUA headquarters, a place where some of our members had key responsibilities. They found a way for many years to stay together as a group, even after two members of the group were part of a difficult decision where one decided that the programming of another was to be eliminated and that person was to be retired. Close-knit little group, hard decisions, and yet still somehow they had the capacity to be with one another. Not roommates, maybe, during the retreat, but certainly ready to be with each other in study, in worship, in our business meeting, in our social time. Out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. I remember a hard decision a church I once served made. They had received a large bequest, and a small group, a tiny group within the church, had kind of controlled the income from that bequest for years and years. They doled out social justice grants to little organizations that they felt were worthy of their support. The church, the larger church itself, wondered about the wisdom of this tiny group making these decisions, and together engaged a long process of discussing with each other what the best use of this bequest might be. And they decided to expand the facility so that the church itself could grow, and that the church itself could do the work that the partner groups had been doing. There was a lot of pain in making that decision, and it was easy to see some seeing it as a question of right doing and wrong doing, that one of these things is right and one of these things is wrong. Even after the decision was made, even after the expanded facilities were under construction, there were people ready to say it was wrongdoing, wrongdoing. Several members left because they disagreed with the decision of the majority. And others left because they just could not take the temperature of the place. They couldn't take the arguments that broke out among people. And new people came and they did not stay, because they could not find a home in a place that was so divided. The accusations of wrongdoing and the convictions of rightdoing were sometimes so strong. But the question of spending money on the facilities, and sometimes people said spending money on ourselves to be the church, came around again and again. And in the first year of our ministry there, we tried to make a decision about how to complete a project of buying pews for the sanctuary. There had been some old pews that had been in a different sanctuary, different prayer hall, that had been moved into the sanctuary, but there really needed to be something beautiful there. And they didn't want cheap seats. The leadership of the church chose substantial and beautiful and useful cushioned chairs, some single wide and some double wide, to match the ones that had been purchased a decade earlier, and now it was time to complete the task. The very first family that came forward with a pledge to purchase 10 of these $150 apiece chairs were the leaders of the group that had said, we don't want to spend money on ourselves. We don't want to expand the sanctuary. And here they were 15 years later saying, we want this sanctuary to be everything that it should be. We want these useful, substantial, and beautiful chairs to fill out this place so that this place may be filled with people who want to come to know and love the message that we have to share. 15 years after the new building had been built, they were the first to contribute in a public and vocal way to to the completion of the task, with beauty, with their personal involvement, with pride, with honor, with joy. Out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. Pete Seeger is loved. Loved by our nation. Peace activists and civil rights and social justice builders and workers and environmentalists and Unitarian Universalists all over this land are grieving the loss of Pete, our national treasure, who died on Monday night, incidentally, while the Freighters of the Wayside Inn were in the midst of our sing-along. As a young adult, Pete had been a member of the Young Communist League and later a member of the Communist Party of the United States of America, CPUSA. A whole generation of idealistic young people saw themselves as being supporters of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal by being to the left of Roosevelt, by working with the system to make it perform to the best of its capacity to deliver political and economic democracy to our country, and should it not be able to live up to the task, to propose an alternative. Likewise, the communists of that era agreed that the military might of our country could be used to limit and even end fascism in Europe and Japanese imperialism in Asia and the Pacific. Pete didn't stay in the Communist Party very long, but he never publicly distanced himself from the ideals that his membership represented. He'd say for all of his life, "I'm a small C communist, just like I do." To the extent that communism means a responsible sharing of the common weal for the uplift of the wretched of the earth and the development of each and every human soul, I'm one of those. I'm a small C communist. But I never want my ideology to stand in the way of that broader meeting place beyond right doing and wrong doing. There must be a place where the small C communists and all people of goodwill may meet. A place where we can get beyond right and wrong doing and simply be. Christian theologians have long spoken about the scandal of the incarnation. And this matter is talking about the awful limitation of Jesus being born. He was born a man, because in these human bodies, one must be born with some sexual identity. He was born a first century Palestinian, because he must be born in a real time and a real place. He was born a Jew, because each person must be born into a culture. The scandal of incarnation says that while divinity may be born into a particular form, it can never mean that divinity does not exist in all the other particular forms. Jesus being a man does not mean that divinity is not incarnated in woman. Jesus being Palestinian does not mean dignity and divinity is not incarnated in Asia or Africa or America. The scandal of incarnation is the acceptance that the incomplete does not mask the complete. Universalist theologian Clarence Russell Skinner, a professor who taught many of the Freighters of the Wayside Inn in another generation, spoke of the interplay of partialism and universalism. We each can only live the lives that we live. We are partial. I am here and not everywhere. My life may be 70 or by reason of strength 80 years, but my life cannot be forever. The best thinking I have today is only partial and may not meet the demands of tomorrow. I live in partialism, in completion, with limits. But my religion, this religion of overwhelming love, is about universalism. Love that is everywhere. Love that is for all time. Love that is without limits, that embraces all the partials, that is fully complete. This love reaches me in my supreme joy and in my pain, in my great confidence and in my most fearful frailty. It touches me and sets me free to be the change I want to see in the world, and even to reach out to you, that we might be the change we hope to see. Beyond the wrongdoing and the right doing, beyond the wrongdoes that we are and the right doos that we are, the wrongdoing on our behalf, the wrongdoing by us, the right doing that we can imagine and attempt and sometimes accomplish, beyond it all, there is this life, this wild and precious life that we experience, this precious web of existence of which we are all a part, this web of love universal that holds us, this love which can be for us a field, a force field and a love field, a great beyond which we will welcome and to which we will be welcomed. O universal love, out beyond ideas of right doing and wrongdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. Amen.